HRHeadquarters.ie, the podcast.
Okay, so today I am joined by Ruben Hamilius from businessgames.ie. Ruben is the co-founder and managing director of Business Games. Ruben, you're very welcome.
Thank you. Declan, how are you?
I'm doing really good. Thanks a lot. Ruben, first things first, businessgames.ie, what do you guys do?
So we create experiential learning activities. And then in experiential learning activities, two things come together. People have fun, they play together, and they learn something. So we always use game formats, hence the word business games. And we do that for different purposes. It could be team building or it could be training. But the idea is that people go through an experience together. And by that, you know, it's engaging, it's interactive. And then we bring in extra objectives into that.
Very good. And how did the company come about? What need were you trying to solve?
So before I started with business games, I was working for a large corporate for a couple of years. And I think what some people might recognize is that as part of the corporate, you know, we would have a lot of trainings and an inspirational speaker. Sometimes they would come in, but it would be a lot of classroom training. So a lot of times you'd sit there and you'd have, you know, your email or your WhatsApp under the table and you'd be doing something else. And then the training might be interesting, but you might have other things on and therefore you're not really paying attention, or it comes a bit at the wrong point in time and you're not completely engaged, so you kind of lose out on the benefit of the training. And then on the other hand, we would have team building activities. They bring 50 people together, 100 people together. Absolutely amazing, amazing things. I remember when I worked in Geneva, we were sliding down a mountain on sledges with 150 people. But then you're kind of wondering, is it going to help me perform my job better tomorrow, right? Am I actually really getting to know the person next to me? Because we're sliding down a mountain at 25 kilometers an hour, so I'm not really talking to him. So the idea of business games was to bring those two together. People should have fun. If we don't go through experiences together, we don't get to know each other, but we have to have something semi-useful to chat about as well. So in a game, you can create that context for people to go through something together, whereby unbeknownst to them almost, we bring in the training part as well. And that's kind of where the need is. And I think that's where a lot of our clients and the teams that we work with, it's exactly that they pinpoint as the place where we play.
I'm going to pick up on some of the points you just made there now in a second, but what's your own background, Ruben? How did you end up
So I used to work for a big corporate. I used to work for Procter & Gamble in marketing for a lot of years. I was very fortunate to travel around the world with the company. And everywhere I would kind of recognize that same need. And I was kind of drawn to working with people and being able to make those things and make those moments better. So I started organizing them internally, kind of. You know, I became in charge of the team building and then tried to wheel in some of the content or how do we make the trainings more engaging. And then Procter & Gamble became my first client. And then I moved from Singapore to Ireland, and I have a partner in the Netherlands who originally started with business games. And so now we have like multiple people in the world that connect and that all do the same thing, which is bring those business games. And that's how we learn from each other. And then I ended up in Ireland because, hey, the Irish, if you move back to Europe from Singapore, who are the nicest people, right? They must be here. So that's how we settled in Dublin.
You're saying all the right things for this podcast. You mentioned a couple of things there. You talked about shared experience and experiential learning. Are there any particular areas of businesses? You've mentioned teamwork already. Is there anything, what areas can you focus on, or where do you think people get the most benefit from your style of learning?
Yeah, it's a good question. Experiential learning, or learning by doing, it has been used by a lot of companies for a long time already, right? More progressive companies, they would have figured out that if you just have an expert telling you things, especially for adult brains and the way that we work, we kind of lose that childlike innocence of believing what someone tells us. So we need to experience it for ourselves. And if you think about classroom training, like imagine you would have to learn how to swim the breaststroke and somebody shows you slides on how to do it, right? You get a lot of theory, but the reality of it is very, very different. And by creating an experience around it, you can pretty much apply it to any area of business. It could be communicating or change management, or how do I organize as a team, negotiating, leadership as well, which is basically taking into account factors in order to be able to make decisions. So decision making. And for all of those soft skills, we can create an experience whereby, you know, you find yourself in a situation, you have to do, you have to act, and then we do it under the form of a game because it's fun, you don't overthink it. And then afterwards, you can kind of pause and reflect on, okay, what now happened? I lost the game, I won the game, why is that? And which of the moments that I went through and the decisions that I made are actually really reflective of what happens day to day as well. So any type of soft skill, leadership training, you could apply it on. You just need to bring in the right format of the activity. You need to put people through the correct situations.
And for your own product offering, Ruben, like, do you guys then come in and assess the person's performance within the game, or do someone internally do that, or how does that work in practice?
Yeah, that's a very good question. So there, a lot of times our clients will choose to collaborate with us on the entire process because they might know what is the problem, right? I have teams and this is the behavior I want to see more of that I don't see enough of. This is the behavior I want to see more of that I'm already seeing. This is the behavior I want to start seeing that nobody is doing yet. And the better that briefing is, the better the people in charge or the manager, whatever, knows what they want, the better we can create an activity that will put people through those situations. Now, our team will observe because, of course, we know the activity very well. We know what to pick up on, and we'll be able to bring that back to mirror or confront people with those situations. And from there, we build a debrief and we have a chat. And then, of course, all the way at the end, we love to bring in our clients into the conversations because they can then transpose that game experience into the day-to-day work tomorrow in the office. And of course, there you want people that are in the office every single day to be able to bring on that the insights that were learned from the activity into, well, next steps. What are we going to do differently tomorrow? What might we consider changing? And so there it becomes a co-creation type of thing to get the most out of the activity.
And for people, Ruben, who aren't familiar with gamification as a concept, will you just give us an outline of what you consider gamification to be?
Yeah, so there's a very interesting difference in the use of the vocabulary. So on one side, there's gamification, and on the other side, there's game-based learning. Gamification is basically turning a process or a system that is inherently not a game, but adding certain elements to it to make it more fun. A very simple way is you might have filled in your LinkedIn profile, or you might have filled in another profile on the website. Now, that's just a process. What these companies like to do, they want to motivate you to finish that process, to complete it. So they gamify it by having perhaps a progress tracker at the top, or you might get a badge. So that is gamification. I make an existing process more fun by adding in these elements. What we do is slightly different. We really do game-based learning. So we don't start from an existing process. We create a completely new activity that has as a purpose to achieve certain objective, to teach you certain things, to make you go through certain experiences by yourself, to confront you with certain things. And that it's a separate thing altogether, because what comes out is game-based learning. It's a training, it's an activity, it's a workshop, whatever you want. But because we want people to remember what they've been through, we want it to be memorable, we want people to have fun doing it, a game and the story that goes with that, the context that is created, the players, the thrill of winning, the unfortunate feelings you feel when you're losing, all of that makes that it sticks and that you remember something, which is then the difference with someone just telling you something and you sitting and listening in a classroom setup.
Yeah, that's a really interesting point for me. In terms of that stickiness of the message or the new, the new skill the person's learned, is there any data points you can point at to say it is, how superior it is compared to, say, classroom, the traditional classroom-based learning?
So there's a lot of studies out there that will prove that when you go through an experience, you remember it better. But it's very easy for ourselves to reflect on it. I mean, I sometimes ask people, when is the last time you played Monopoly? And then you have different people in the room. Some will say last week, others will say 5 years ago, 10 weeks ago, 15 years ago. Anybody who you ask, what do you remember about Monopoly? They'll know one or two rules. They might even remember a game that they played 10 years ago. And I'm not very familiar with the Ireland setup, but there's always at least three people in the room who will know what the most expensive street of their Monopoly board is. Why is that? It's because when you play, there's emotion involved, an emotion we remember. When we play, there's a story involved. Like, I go around, I have to buy houses, I lose, I win. And that story we remember. So it makes total sense that when you go through a game or an experience, that is more sticky and you'll remember that better. Now, if you switch out the houses you build on streets in this, Monopoly board world, but you switch it out with products which have to be put onto shelves or with services that have to be offered to different regions in the world, when you walk out, just like with Monopoly, you'll remember all of those elements. And then, of course, we specialize in making sure that those are the relevant elements for the players. So with a good story, with emotion, with interaction, that's where the stickiness, you know, as people like to say, where that comes in.
Very good. I think it's Aylesbury Road. I think that's the street you need to know, Ruben.
Yes, exactly.
Ireland. Aylesbury Road. I'm pretty sure that's the highest one for the Irish version.
I think so too. You put a hotel on there and it's game over for
that's
everyone.
That's it, game over. Look, you're a big proponent, obviously, of game-based learning. What are the other upsides to it? We've talked about the stickiness. What are the other upsides to this approach to learning?
So I think what is very important is that learning in general, it is not a one moment thing. It's an ongoing process. We all do it. We do it day in, day out. It's ongoing. And importantly, we do it in very different ways. So the best, and we're not experts at this, but there's people in the world, they're amazing at building training programs. And one of the keys of the building program is that it needs to be varied, and different types of learning need to be mixed inside. A term people like to use is blended learning. And there is room there for an expert to come in and to tell you something. Out of my experience, this is what you should do. And then there's room for round the table discussion where I just tell you what I've lived through in my life and the other way around. And one of the components that is often missed there is the experiential piece. So I would never advocate that people should only do experiential learning, but very often it is still missed from the mix and from the blend of all of those other types of learning. Because e-learning, for example, is a great one as well. You have your phone or a tablet, and whenever you are on the bus, you can quickly click through small, 10-minute trainings specifically for you, which works great. But again, certain things you really need to experience in order to practice it. So to make that circle round, experiential learning is an important part. And a lot of companies have over the last year moved into that, but it's not always as easy. You need to get people together offline or online, and the activity needs to be a good balance between fun and learning, because if it's silly, people tune out immediately. It's done, right? We're grown-ups. We're not here to play a stupid game. But if that is a good simulation, then we might be enticed and then we learn there. So the summary is that it has its place within the overall thing, but it's a tool that now is still very underused, I think.
And obviously, the majority of us are working remotely at the moment. What's experiential or game-based learning like in a remote environment?
Well, I won't lie, it's more tough. It's more tough. What we set out to do very early on, we tried to deliver on the same promise that we had when we do offline things, which is that it's face-to-face, even though it's through a conference call. It needs to be highly interactive. It needs to be team-based. And we still want the game aspect. You need to win, lose, a story, etc. And so we've managed successfully to recreate that. But I think the big challenge is that we are all still relearning a lot of very basic skills. We're not very, and you can feel it, right? If you have a chat with your mates, four people in the call, it's a bit awkward because, well, it doesn't work the same way. You can't talk three people at the same time because you won't hear them. And in real life, you can. So I think there's a lot of social skills that we're all still developing now. And this was an evolution. We were already developing them, but now it's, you know, going so much faster because of the current situation. And so as we're developing those remote social skills, it'll become easier and easier to do more in that world. And I firmly believe that in a year from now, our online activities and our offline activities, when it comes to the quality, the fun, and people walking away saying that was great, it'll be the same. But we're adapting still to the new system. So I think it's perfectly possible to deliver on both, but we're all going through that transformation still.
I'm guessing it's easier for you to scale, though. I presume it's easier for you to deliver to larger groups. Annie, you know, do you have a tipping point where it's like too many people, or can people go through the game and be reviewed at a later date, if you know what I mean? Can it almost be recorded and you review the activity later? Yeah.
It's a very good observation, right? Because we really see all of a sudden companies that would earlier say, we need to get the people together at the same time and it's difficult because they need to fly in. All of a sudden we have the same teams that say, but now we want to include the America team and we'll get the Middle East team and we have three people dialing in from Singapore as well, where they combine them. And there's great opportunities in there, I think, because having them versus not having them involved, then it makes a difference, of course. Now, when it comes to the size of the group, it depends on your objectives. If you want something hardcore training on negotiating, then I would suggest never to go above 20 people in a group, because if not, you won't get the quality. But only recently, for team building, end of year purposes, where it's about, you know, communicating, just having fun together, practicing a little bit on how to do this remote work thing, also basic things like screen sharing and using different tools, we've run games up to 350, 400 people. There's no problem with that. In those cases, of course, they're not each going to be evaluated independently, but that's then also not the issue. But it's very possible to scale both from the group size and from, you know, the people that you want to involve across the organization or across the country.
And I know you're again a proponent that this can massively boost company productivity. Talk to me a little bit about that.
Some people do this very well, but sometimes we see that a lot of time gets invested into analyzing the needs analysis, as they say, what is wrong, what do we want? And then there's a lot of money and time invested in creating content and in creating, you know, theories, and this is what people should do. But then where we lose it, it is the translation from that theory, from all these brilliant ideas, into people really changing behavior. And that changing behavior thing, that is the critical one. So a lot of times we will not create new content at all. We will just get, you know, the 80 slides with brilliant content that were created for the new hires. The only problem is they don't remember anything after they've been wheeled through 80 slides. And then we take those and then we create a game so that the 80 slides, they work better for their purpose. So I like to think of experiential learning and then game-based learning as one of the types of experiential learning, as a way to make your training budget work better for you and get more out of it, avoiding the fact that all of that time freed up, people coming together, getting the trainers there, that it doesn't have as much impact as it can or as it should.
You're what you described there, the 80 slides and stuff. I think we've all sat through that hell at some stage in our careers. Do you get many objections when you are initially talking to companies around, you know, they're them being more used to the traditional style of learning and that yours is maybe a little bit more fun? Do you have to overcome that objection much with some older style companies?
It's definitely sometimes a challenge. For some people, it's definitely a barrier. And we always have individuals who kind of get this and they want to go after it, and then they have to kind of sell the organization on the idea. Oh, we've learned that there's a couple of mantras, right? The first one, step by step. We always tell people, you know, how about we set up a pilot with a small group of people and you experience how it's going to run. There's always people who think they hear games and they think it's going to be silly. And it's very difficult to convince them it's not going to be silly unless we take them through. So we try to always do, we always have a chat whereby we ask, you know, whoever is making a decision, what are all the risks they see? What are all the challenges they see? And we try to show them with previous success cases and testimonials how we've addressed those and how that then will be a success. And then we try to set up a demo. Now, typically, I can say whenever we manage to do a demo, then it goes because we can, you know, we take away the fear from people. But I think that there's a remarkable willingness in companies now when it comes to people engagement and training and learn and development to really try new things. And I think that is kind of an upside of the current situation, is that instead of us slowly, you know, evolving into this, we've been shook up that, well, we need to do things differently. And you can do things differently practically by being on a call. But, you know, also the way that you then teach and what we should be teaching is kind of questioned all together at the same time. So that's a great moment. And we see a lot of people now rethinking a lot of things a little bit broader in order to be set up for success for the future.
Yeah, really good point. I think, as you say, lots of companies are reconsidering things they considered off the table in the past. You touched on it earlier. Is there any particular areas that I know you said soft skills were great, etc. Is there any areas where you just feel it's not suitable, or any particular areas where you find there's a commonality in companies wishing to use game-based learning to emphasize their training?
There definitely are. I think when you are, when you want people to do a precise action, or if there's a very precise way of doing things, then there's for sure better ways to do that than to bring it into a game. First problem is that a game sets up a hypothetical scenario, but if your hypothetical scenario, you know, cannot change very fast, it's not likely to change, and you want people to react in a specific way in a specific situation, then you kind of want to not have the fluidity of a game and the creative and imaginative angle of the game there. Then you want something really, really fixed. So if I wouldn't take on any project where we want to teach an engineer how to close a safety valve in perfectly the right way, because, you know, the whole context that we would be creating kind of would distract from the seriousness of what we're trying to do. I mean, we bring in a lot of content for onboarding, for example, but that's very different from a specialist skill that you want to teach people. There, I think that repetition and e-learning and making sure that people touch upon the same thing multiple times and then they get the finger memory or the muscle memory, even if it's the mental muscle memory, those techniques are then better. So that I wouldn't recommend as much.
What aspects of the onboarding journey, just as an example, would you typically cover off?
So one thing which is quite tricky for organizations to do is new hires come in, and then we have our mission, our vision, and then we have our values. But what do our values mean? Because we all have different experiences, we've worked in different places. So when you have that word and that poster on the wall which displays our values, we don't interpret that in the same way. So what we do very often is we create an experience, a game, whereby everyone goes through the same experience. They can share that, they can discuss it. And so from then on, when within the company we are using that word or that concept, it is clear for everyone, what does that mean for us as employees for this company? And it is no longer just something that I might interpret completely different. So this common vocabulary and common understanding of what do we inside our company understand when we talk about ownership, when we talk about leadership, when we talk about, to create that at the beginning of an induction of an onboarding program, that's where a game is brilliant. If not, you can show the people the posters and they might remember the words, but what do they mean practically and how we work together? That's very difficult to convey. So that's a clear winner.
Yeah, absolutely. It is. As you say, it's very hard to embed those values or those behaviors that you want to see at that early stage. So that is an interesting aspect of it. Any interesting trends in terms of the future, technology, anything you're keeping an eye on that might, you know, at some point in the future form part of this?
Yeah, I think very specifically, when we talk about the online stuff, I think companies and teams, including ourselves, we still have a ways to go to learn and start using the different tools and softwares that are out there. So I think for us, we very intensively started researching what can we use, how can we use it, and we discovered great tools. But we're encountering day to day that certain companies, they're still using the same technology as they were in February for their occasional conference call. Other companies, they're, you know, they've reinvented everything, and that's a process as well. And I think that's something that teams, individuals, companies need to keep investing in, because we're only going to see more tools come out to do this type of collaboration virtually. And we need to stay on top. We of course all know the conference tools, the Zoom and the Microsoft Teams and the Google. But then you have collaborative whiteboards that you can all use in browser. We use chatbots and a lot in order to deliver a training or guide people through. We use WhatsApp routinely as part of the games. There's a whole bunch of tools that you can use on your phone to have quizzes and polls and that type of stuff. And that, I think, really is not our capability on that is not yet where it will have to be in order to fully benefit from what is possible there. And that takes time, right? We all need to spend the time and the money to train that, to practice it in order to get to that level. Absolutely. And if you think about it, I have not had to relearn skills completely from zero since I was quite young. You know, all of the life skills I had, name it, if it's cooking, if it's negotiating, if it's talking, if it's working together, these are things I've been practicing since I was young. And I might be good or bad at it, but it's a continuous process. Now there's really a couple of things that go completely from zero. How to use, you know, collaborative software through my computer whilst other people, etc. I just used to sit at a table and share a piece of paper, but like zero, we need to start again. So I think that it takes effort, and we should spend the effort or invest the effort to get there.
Absolutely, yeah. I think we've all been on that journey of learning these new skills. Ruben, you guys are doing some interesting stuff around Christmas and engagement and team building and stuff. Do you want to just tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, I'd be happy to. Challenges, of course, that, you know, all teams, they want to get together, they want to have a nice Christmas dinner and then perhaps a party, but that's difficult. So we've created a couple of team-based activities that you can do with large groups as well. One of the most popular one now is the Holidays Around the World game. And so we have teams of 4 to 6 people. And as a team, they're guided by a chatbot that is taking them on a trip through the world. They have to do challenges everywhere. There's a travel guide in a WhatsApp group with them who will evaluate whatever they do. So we have a nice mix between technology, chatbot, and human interaction with the facilitator, which allows us to do a whole broader variety of activities. We're not stuck to just puzzles. We're not stuck to just quiz questions, but it goes all over the place. And it's a 90-minute, two-hour activity, which we're now running pretty much every day with small and big teams. And it's a real winner, because it gives people really the idea of having fun with the team again. You know, people say there's Zoom fatigue, but it kind of depends on what you're doing on Zoom as well. So we get them to the point where they say, I totally forgot I was on Zoom for the last hour. This was something completely different. I think that's what we're going for, something different from everything what they've experienced perhaps in the last 6 months.
Yeah, I think blaming Zoom for the content of a particular conference call or game is harsh on Zoom. Ruben, it's been great chatting to you. If people want to get more information about what you guys do, Christmas offering or in general skills training, what's the best way to get in contact?
Best way is to definitely have a peek at the website, www.businessgames.ie. And there's a lot of games there, but I always recommend people don't even bother trying to select yourself. Just pop us over an email and we'll have a chat and we'll propose or we'll look with you what we think might help you and then see if we can be of value.
Great stuff, Ruben. And obviously we'll link to all of that below the podcast. Ruben, thanks so much for your time today.
Thanks so much. Thanks for having me, Declan.
No problem. Thank you.
HRHeadquarters.ie, the podcast.